Hello, mamas, and welcome to another episode of Angel Moms Hopes of Heaven with Alana Song. I'm Angela Presley, your host today, and I am here with someone that I've been anticipating all week. She's been excited, I've been excited. So the moment has finally arrived, and we are here today to talk to Miss Zanetta Henry. And she's going to tell us about her journey, everything she's into, everything she's doing, walking throughout the purpose of this journey. And first of all, I have to get her started with her son, Dre. We want to start the podcast loving on your baby. So I ask all my mamas to just tell us about their babies before we get started with anything. So welcome, Zanetta, and let's hear about Dre.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Angela, for having me on your podcast. I am very, very excited, and I really do appreciate it, because anytime that I have the opportunity to share my baby Dre, yeah, I'm just always excited and elated to just do so. My son, Dre, we call him Dre. His full name is Dre Charles Henry. Mm-hmm. And he was born on May the 4th, 1996. Now, Dre was this bubbly child from the moment of creation up until the moment that he left. Mm-hmm. So on that day when he was born, it was the most exhausting day I think I had ever had. Yeah. I have one other child, and she was my daughter, and she was she is 5 years older than him. They were 5 years apart. And I can remember when I had her, I was tired, but I was still able, I was awake, and I was still able to just love on her and just this and that. But when I had Dre, he decided he wanted to take a right turn instead of coming out straight. So, you know, they had to kind of straighten him up and get him on the right path and direct him out. And so it was extremely exhausting. Mm-hmm. And after he was born, I can remember visitors coming, and I'm saying to myself, like, oh my God, I'm so exhausted. I just want to go to sleep. And then they bring this beautiful face to me. And when they brought that beautiful face, and all of this was after he was cleaned up and all of this and that. And I was able to love on him, of course, when he first came out and everything. But when they rolled me into a room, I was like, oh, I just want to go to sleep. I'm so tired. But then when they brought that beautiful round, just this big, beautiful round glowing face looking at me, I was like, okay, I'm awake again. Yeah. I'm awake. I got the energy I need. Yeah. And I was able to just, you know, lay there and just love on him. And from that moment, really from the moment of creation, he was this bubbly child. Dre's characteristics were laughter. He loved to laugh. He loved to make other people laugh. He was just the life of the party. Yeah. He could make a tree talk to him because he was just that type of person. He met no strangers. Mm-hmm. And any room he went in, he was always, like I said, he was the life of the party. He could go in any state, anywhere. And he would just start talking to people, and he would just, you know, just develop this friendship. He never really saw anybody as enemies. He never really, you know, he didn't hold grudges. Mm-hmm. He was not angry. Even if he got angry, of course he got angry, you know, as he began to get older, of course, you know, especially teenage years and things like that. He never held a grudge. If he was angry, it was only for a few minutes, because he would go ahead. He would, you know, be angry, but then it'll pass. And he would, the next 5 minutes, if he was angry with you, you wouldn't know it, because he would be talking to you, you know, or just socializing with you or laughing or whatever, because that was his personality. Wow. He associated himself with pretty much any and everybody. And I can remember, like, when he was small, and this was a life trend as well. He was always drawn to the active and the crowd, the mischievous crowd. I'm gonna say it like that. He's always drawn to the crowd that were, really excited, loud, exploring, the crowd that wanted to see how things work, even things they shouldn't have been trying to figure out how to work. He was always drawn to that crowd. And in the middle of that crowd, everybody could be doing the exact same thing, but he would be the only one to get caught. And that was from daycare, kindergarten, all through his, elementary school years, his junior high years, high school years, and even in adulthood. He could be in that crowd and everybody's doing the same thing, against the rules, but yet he would be the only one to get caught. And I would tell him all the time, son, it's because you're not supposed to be in that crowd. You're supposed to be doing something else. You're always the one to get caught. But he would just smile at me and he would just laugh at me or whatever. And he'd just keep going because he knew. And there was so many times that, especially as a parent, you look and you're like, look, this is not the crowd for you. This is not where you should be. This is not what you should be doing. And you work hard to try to, I guess, to change. And there's no other way really to say it, but to change their ways, their personalities, to change the things that you think are not the best for them. And so as that parent, I found myself doing that a whole lot. Because when I say he would mingle and he would associate and he would have fun with and party with and hang out with anybody really. It didn't matter to him. And he never understood why I would always say, some of these people are not your friends. These people are, they really don't have your back. They're really not going to be there for you. And I would constantly try to, and this was as he got older. And his dad and I would be like, you don't need to be going here. You don't need to be going there. You don't need to do this. You don't need to do that. You need to be doing this. You need to be doing that. Just as parents trying to, redirect some of the crowd and atmospheres in the areas that he decided that he enjoyed hanging in, and it didn't matter to him. But what I heard God say after he transitioned, that I was, and it was one of the days that I was actually going through one of the stages, that guilt, and blaming myself for everything and just trying to figure out what could I have done different? What could I have changed? What could I have said? What could I have done? And just beating myself up. And I heard God said that, he said he was not to be changed. He was created to bring about a change. And I was like, wow, I get it, God. I get it. The spiritual woman, mother gets it, but the natural mother still struggles. It's still like, no, I can't accept this. But the spiritual woman accepts that God. And that just made so much sense to me in connection with everything that has happened and in my purpose. And again, like I said, he was that bubbly person. He was excited about life. He enjoyed life. And he always knew, and there was this song, and I hear my daughter saying it all the time, and I guess that's why I, kind of latched onto it, because I don't even know which song it came from or whatever, but you know how the young people listen to this different stuff. And it was like he knew. Dre knew that he was here for a good time. He was not here for a long
For a
time.
long time.
Right. And so when he was killed, he was 22 years old. So, to us, that wasn't long enough. because he was supposed to see us out, not us see him out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So at 22, he lost his life. Well, his life was taken. He didn't lose it. His life was taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was shot multiple times from behind. And again, you know, we'll probably never figure out why.
Yeah.
And even given the opportunity, I didn't ask the question why, because I know even the person that was held accountable for it, they don't know why. And they couldn't have answered that question for me. So I didn't even, you know, I didn't even go there.
Yeah.
But to just know that those 22 years, I'm grateful for, because he brought so much joy to our life.
Yeah. Wonderful.
He did.
Wonderful. Just listening to your description of your baby, just that it reminds me, I automatically go to Alana, my baby. Mm-hmm. She had that same bubbly. She didn't meet a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
She was like a people magnet, you know. So just listening to your description of Dre, I'm just smiling on the inside. And I'm like, I'm sure they're cracking up in heaven, because they definitely did it here.
And I could just see them, because another something about him. Oh, he loved women.
Uh-huh.
You know, he loved beautiful women. He was very flirtatious.
Uh-huh.
And he just loved you know, just chasing after women and, you know, girls and whatever, you know. So I could just see, you know, him and your baby. I could just see him chasing Alana now.
Yes. And she's giggling. She's giggling. Yeah.
Because he was a charmer. A charmer. He
uh-huh.
could. He. The town that we were in, our hometown, Waynesboro, Mississippi, a lot of people knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in different food places and stores, after everything happened, the people would say, you know, I could never turn him around, because he didn't like wearing shirts, and he didn't like wearing clothes, period.
Uh-huh.
He would always be without a shirt or shoes. If he had on shirt and pants, he still, the shoes would had to be gone. And that was from a baby as well. When
uh-huh.
I would dress him for church, we would start out with, you know, we got this tie, we got our, you know, the whole nine yards from, you know, top to bottom. By the time we made it in the car, the tie is off. By the
uh-huh.
time we made it to the church was probably maybe 10, 15 minutes away. The shoes and the socks were gone. By the time we made it in the church, the jacket was definitely gone. So by the time we made it out of church at the end of the day, he was down to just that shirt and pants. And that was only because I made him keep that on.
Yeah.
But other than that, he had stripped. But he liked being without shirt. You know, being, he's like being free, because he was a free spirit.
Yeah.
And so they would tell me afterwards that Dre knew we wasn't supposed to be serving him without a shirt and shoes, but yet and still, every time he went, they would still serve him. They would still give him what he wanted and say, now, you know, you got to put on some shirt and shoe, you know, some shoes and a shirt, boy. But he would just laugh at him and come back the same day. He could charm his way out of anything.
Mm-hmm. Look at that.
He could.
Yeah.
He really could.
Beautiful. So let's get into some questions that
okay.
I have. Yeah. After Dre, I'd like to say moved to heaven. After Dre moved to heaven, tell me the space that you were in. Because I know there's a period of fog. I want to lead into where the wheels started turning on, okay, I got to do something. What is it, you know, because the purpose of this podcast is for moms to find the purpose in the journey. So I know, and I still have my fog days.
Mm-hmm.
I still have my fog days, but right after Alana moved to heaven, and I'm sure all mamas can relate, this fog is so heavy, you can't move. I didn't move for 3 months. No work, no church, nothing after Alana moved to heaven. So, in that time, wheels are starting to turn. So tell us about your space right after Dre moved to heaven. What was that like for you?
So right afterwards, I was in a fog, but it was thin. I think that's the way I can describe it. I was in a fog, but it was very thin because my trauma response is flight. Okay, so I gotta go, I gotta do, I gotta move. That and that's my response to trauma. So the morning after, I was sitting, my husband and I were sitting on the porch, and we looked up and we saw this dove that was sitting on the power line. And that dove came to visit every single day, once in the morning and once in the afternoon, up until the day after we buried him. We buried him the day before. No, it wasn't the day after we buried. It was a couple of weeks after we buried him is when we stopped seeing it, continuously like that. And we buried him the day before his 23rd birthday. So we were sitting there that morning, and I looked up and saw that dove, and it was like, move, get up. You got to do something. You cannot. And I'm a solutions person. My daughter calls me Miss Fix It. Think I got to fix everything, or think I can fix everything. So that's a part of me that I am now exploring to figure out, okay, how to balance that. Because, beforehand, like I said, I'm just all this person. So the next morning afterwards, I was like, you got to move, you got to do something. So I got up and I went to the place where he was shot. And I stood there to just see what I could see, to try to understand, to try to figure out, even to talk to some people that may have even still kind of been around. And I got a little bit of clarity, just a little bit from doing that. And then immediately I went into, so what do I need to do next? Because this happened on a Friday. Monday morning, I went to work. I got up, I went to work, because his body was sent for an autopsy. And we couldn't make any arrangements or anything like that. And I knew if I stayed at home, that I definitely probably would have never gotten back up. So I got up and I went to work. And when I walked into my, when I walked into the school, because I was in my 22nd year of, no, I was in my 21st year of educating. And at the time I was teaching fifth grade reading. And so when I walked into the school, it was like everybody stopped and looked like, you got to be kidding me. Why are you here? And one of the custodians even came to me. He said, Miss Heron, I just got to say this to you. I said, okay. He said, I thought you was losing your mind. And I said, inside, I said, I am. But I never said it to him. I didn't say it out loud. I just smiled. And he said, how in the world can you walk in here? I said, because if I would have stayed at home, I'd have never got back up again. So I had to get up and move. And the love from my babies, those, my classes that came in and out, the love from those children gave me strength. How they loved on me and how they hugged me and how they, I mean, I get notes just throughout the day. They were just sliding notes on my desk or coming up saying, Miss Henry, can I help you with something? Or, I'm here for you if you need me, and just hugging. And I mean, it was phenomenal. Even children that were not in my class at the time, but children I had previously taught, even the ones that I had not taught, you know, they were just it was all of that love that helped me. It really gave me a lot of strength to keep moving because I knew that love was pure, you know, from those babies. And that helped me so much. So I'm that type of person, like I said, I had to keep moving. And I did. And for the first, from April 2019, April 26, 2019 is when it happened, to early March, I was on the move. I was creating or pulling together prayer vigils, prayer groups outside of the walls of the church. You know, I was nudged to pull people because, for one thing, God had already told me my purpose. And I had already started my nonprofit organization, Operation Recovery. It was started January of 2019. The summer of 2019, as I was walking and praying and meditating and listening to God, I heard God say, "You are called to the mother of wayward children." Because of experiencing so many different things previously, you know, and he said, because I kept seeking him for my purpose. I'm like, what is my purpose? What am I to do? I know there's something greater than what I'm doing at this moment. There's something more. There's a lot more that I'm supposed to be doing besides just preparing a sermon to preach to people or to I know that I'm an intercessor. So I know that there is more that I should be doing. And I just kept seeking God for that purpose. And then when he said, okay, the purpose, you're called to the mother way with children, we began a prayer line on the first and third Sundays, to where we interceded for parents, we interceded for children, we interceded for, you know, and just inviting these parents wayward children to join us on the line, to connect in prayer, as well as, you know, any resources that I could find to help them or to help coach them through some areas that I had already come through or had already, you know, experienced, to just share with them, you know, what worked for me, what helped us in those areas, you know, to regain our relationship and you know, as parent and child, but yet in a different way, you know. So that's what we were actually already doing. And then in April, you know, it just catapulted me and it really pushed me. And I knew then that this is so much bigger. And I knew that, as horrible as it is, that my son's death is bigger than him and it's bigger than me. It's greater. The purpose is bigger and it's greater. So therefore, I couldn't just stop and get stuck in the pain and the hurt because there was purpose. And I don't know if this makes sense, but, and it probably won't to some and it will to some, but we have so many different parts of us and so many different sides of us, you know, because we wear so many, and especially as women, we wear so many hats. So we wear this mother hat, we wear this wife hat, we wear this, you know, teacher hat, or, you know, this, you know, just whatever, you know, all the different hats that we wear. So I still say all the time, you know, and I talk to God all the time. I'm like, God, the mother side of me still fights and can't accept this and hurts and this and that. But then the spiritual side of me and the part of me that knows and understands purpose understands and accepts, and we're okay. You know, we can move. So that the first, within that time period from April 26 up until early March, we actually we were moving. And like I said, we were pulling together prayer vigils. We were just inviting people to come outside of the church walls to pull the community out. That's when I began to actually step outside and realize that there is so much work in the community that needed to be done. And this was part of the purpose. And I refused to allow my son's death to be in vain. And so I began to do things in the community. I began to try to get out and about and begin to associate with the community. And another thing, you know, about Dre is there are so many people that I would have never connected with, that I would have never, right in my own community. There's even family that I probably would have never connected with, but because of him, I have a great relationship with now. He, and it was because he refused to put limits on the people that he would associate with. He didn't have any boundaries when it came to people. He loved people. And so he would mingle and he would love with anybody. He saw nothing that a lot of other, you know, people, including myself, be like, well, you know, this might not be the right crowd or the best crowd, you know, because of what we may think or feel or have our own opinions. But now, because of he opened those doors, the best relationships have come out of that. And the most love, and genuine love has come from that. So within that time span, I was moving. When it really hit me and when I really began to crash and crush was when we was about to hit that first year anniversary and moving into that second year. I went into a very deep, deep, deep depression, but I still didn't stop moving. What I couldn't stop moving.
I was gonna ask that, you know, where was your grieving during, because you were just moving. Where did you give your time to grieve? Did your husband ever say, now wait a minute? Now you are going to have to pull back.
They did. I'm sorry, that's Nola.
That's okay. Hi,
So,
Nola.
yes, I think what I did, I was constantly moving. And when I look back now, I look back and I see myself and I can see my husband, I can see my daughter, and I can see my mom and my sister and just everybody that was around me. My, because thank God I have an amazing support team. I'm talking about the best from the job that I was on at the time, the people at the school. It didn't matter where I went, people at the church, my family, just everybody. But anyway, they all, what I see when I look back now, they saw me somewhat like the Energizer Bunny. And that's the way I was moving, like, whoop, 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 gotta go do this. And talking in riddles and this and that, and just like all over the place. That's what they saw. But I knew what was, I knew, but I didn't know what was going on the inside of me, because I had a friend to reach out to me. And I'm so glad she did. She was really one of the first people to reach out to me outside of my normal, you know, fellowshipping groups or whatever. She, her name is Patricia, Patricia White, and her son David was killed December prior to, I think it was December 2018, on his birthday. And she saw my interview on the news, and she called, she inboxed me on Facebook, and she said, I just want to reach out to you. She said, because I know where you are. And she began to tell me David's story and tell me about her and David. And she said, I want to share with you, don't get afraid or don't think that you're losing your mind when brain fog sets in, when you begin to forget where you put your keys, if you're driving and you can't remember where you were going, if you can't finish your sentence. She was like, that's called brain fog. She said, you're not losing your mind, and it's gonna feel like you're losing your mind. And she shared so many other things with me. And I didn't, when she shared it with me, was more or less like at the very beginning of the it was at the very beginning of this journey. So I was okay in those areas because, again, I was this Energizer Bunny, and I was just steady moving. And I would take breaks in between. I had my days to where I was kicking holes in the walls, days to where my husband had to come and literally pick me up out of the shower, dry me off, and put my clothes on. because I was breaking down in the shower. So in between that, I was still breaking down and I was having my moments. Because there were days that, he literally had to sit me up on the side of the bed, put my feet on the floor, and walk me outside to try to get me out of the bed. There was times that one time was so bad that he got me outside and he just didn't know what else to do. I was in such bad shape. And so he called my niece, and my niece called all the my press sisters. And when I really came to, because it was just like I was so out of it or something, but when I really just kind of start focusing, I felt their gentle hands from my head all the way to my feet. There was somebody touching a part of my body and praying and, just ushering me back into, I guess the real world or reality or whatever. So I had my moments, but I still, within that time period, I was still moving, and I can just see now in my head what I look like to them. But at that moment, that's what I had to do, or I really, if I would have crashed within that time span, I would have never gotten back up again. And I know that.
I stayed with my mom. I couldn't bring myself to come back into our home. Alana was 17 when she moved to heaven. So I was over to my mom's for maybe 6 months before I could even come back into our home. And I stayed on her couch the whole time. Mind you, my mom lives alone in a 3-bedroom house. I stayed on her couch. Something within me just knew had I gone up in one of those bedrooms, I wouldn't have came back home. I wouldn't have came back home. So it's just something. I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. Had I not gotten up then, I would not have gotten up, period. So I'm sure all moms know exactly where you're coming from with that. And we're all in different lanes. We're all in different lanes in this journey. I couldn't move, but like you said, you're an action. I gotta get going. I gotta get going. There's a couple of things that you said that I wanted to touch on. It's the same thing that you said, but you've said it more than once. My physical side and my spiritual side. And that's something that really keeps me going, because the mama, all I want is Alana.
Exactly.
All I want is Alana. But as you said, there's a purpose. Alana was here for this short of time for me to carry out the purpose. So that's the spiritual side. And I find myself often sitting down, just thinking and talking to the Lord. And I'm saying, when am I ever going to be able to say it is well with my soul? I have not yet been able to just sit and it, in a calm and say, it is well. It is well. So that's something I'm working on personally. So when you separated the two, that just brought me back to that. I still cannot say it is well. I spiritually, I get it. Spiritually, I get it. But will I ever be able to say that as the mama? As
I
the,
don't think so.
yeah.
And that's just my opinion. I don't think the mother will ever be able to say that. We can say that spiritually, because the mother is going to always long for the physical child that we were allowed to bring into this world. So I don't think we're going to ever, and I could be wrong, but that's just my opinion.
And Maybe as Alana's 2015 and Dre was 2019.
19.
So maybe as the journey goes on, we can talk to moms who are 20 years or 30 years in the journey, and they see more than we see now. And
Right.
it's well with their soul. It's with
Right.
their soul, and that's another reason why I titled the podcast what I did, The Hopes of Heaven. The hopes of heaven, that gets me just a little bit closer to saying, okay, it's well, So, go ahead and let us know about the nonprofits that you, let me back up just a little bit. Back up just a little bit. Was Dre, did he move to heaven in Mississippi, or where you currently are? Okay.
Yes, he it everything happened in Mississippi.
Okay. So you go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. You go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so you got started, of course, where Dre moved to heaven in Mississippi. How long after did you move away, and did that cause any, did you just move the nonprofits with you, or?
So I started, I like I said, I had already started in January of 2019, but I had not done like official paperwork, and I only started with the prayer line. And so that was basically what we were I'm sorry. That was basically what we were doing at that moment. So and honestly just trying to figure it out. I knew there was purpose. I couldn't understand, exactly what I needed to do. So I was just kind of following the bits and pieces that God were giving me, because what he does is he give me pieces, because he knows if he gives me the whole thing, I'll make a mess. So he has to give me pieces. And so with the pieces that he was giving me, that he continued to give me about how to move, but even in those pieces, he was preparing me for the impact that was coming. So because we had several dreams, because I'm a dreamer as well. And I had several dreams prior to everything happening, but there were years before that to where, people in the dreams came to get me to tell me something had happened to Dre. And then I saw him gunned down in a dream. And it actually right across the street from the place where he was actually gunned down. I also saw him like stabbed real bad in a dream, but he was sitting in the back of a car in my mom's yard. But he was, okay, but I had to get him to the hospital. So I had several dreams prior to, and with starting the nonprofit, I was just trying to figure out how did everything tie into, like the dreams and helping parents and this and that and all of that. And so, like I said, pieces, just pieces. And as I was seeing it, God was again preparing me for that great impact, because Dre even sent me a text. And in the text, I was actually cleaning. And he was always the one to make a mess. He make a mess, he leave it. He would come through. I don't care how old he was, whether he was living there, whether he wasn't. He was coming through, and you were gonna know he had been there. He was gonna leave tracks of dirt on the floor. He was gonna leave the bathroom messy, or he was gonna take out something and leave it down or something. But you was gonna always know that he was there. So I was cleaning, and I saw a handprint. He had went off to work, in Texas, and so he had been gone for a while. And I was cleaning, and I saw a handprint on the wall in the breakfast nook. And so as I was wiping it off, I just started laughing, because I'm like, Dre did it. He did this. And so I text him and I said, "Hey, kid." And he was like, "Hey, mom." I said, "I see a handprint on the wall in the breakfast nook, and you're not even here for me to blame this on you." And he texts me back, "Ha ha ha." He said, but I got something to tell you. And I said, what's up? And he started texting, and he texts me. He said, I feel like I'm going to die before I turn 22. But he was already 22. So I think when he was texting that, he hit the 2 instead of the 3. So immediately I go into prayer mode.
Yes.
You know, I didn't go into mama mode, because I didn't break down at him saying it to me. And my question was, so have you made preparations with your spirit and your soul? Have you made preparations? And he was like, no. And I said, no. He said, nah. I said, okay, well, that's where you need to begin. And I just begin to pray, and I text this long prayer to him, because God had already shifted my prayers like a couple of years before that. He had already shifted my prayers about how I was praying for my children instead of praying what I wanted to happen.
Yeah.
I began to pray God's will. And one of the major things that I constantly prayed was, do not allow them to depart this life, not 1 minute before, or not 1/10 of a second before, not 1/10 of a second after that has been ordained for their lives and their purpose to be served.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because I had began, you know, prior to that, praying that prayer, and that's how I ended the prayer with him. And I told him, you know, I was like, so you do what you need to do. If you feel like this is God's will and that's what's going to happen, or whatever you do, prepare yourself, because there's something that I cannot do for you, you know. And I, you know, and I kind of brushed it off after that, and added in a little joke. I was like, so you stop now, you stop talking like this, because you got to give me some more grandkids. It's up to you now.
Yeah.
You know, and so he said, okay, Mom, I love you. Ha ha ha. You know, I love you. And that was kind of in that. But I as moving in purpose with Operation Recovery, I'm like trying to put all of that together in my mind after all this happened, because he was killed 8 days before his 23rd birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't reach that 23,
yeah,
just as he had said. But I'm trying to put all this together, and I'm like, how do I move? What do I do? Well, again, like I said, with the prayer line, when we actually moved, this was not the main cause, because I knew that I was going to have to move, but I just didn't know how soon
mm-hmm.
it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that I could not build, and I couldn't serve the purpose that I needed to serve, the resources that I needed.
Okay.
To build Operation Recovery and to begin to help and pour in what God wants me to do, I couldn't get what I needed there.
Okay.
So I knew I was going to have to move.
Yeah.
So moving, and so I came to Georgia. And when I came to Georgia, I have more opportunities. I have more resources to really, and I'm able to connect more with people who's helping me to build Operation Recovery, who's helping me phenomenally to be able to pour back into parents that have lost their children, because that's one of our major goals, is we're supporting grieving parents, but we're supporting them emotionally, spiritually, financially, you know, mentally, physically, however we possibly can. We're also advocating for parents who's lost their children to violence. We're advocating for stopping violence in the community. And one of the major, with one of the major partnerships that we have now with Voices of Black Mothers United, which is a national organization that, you know, promotes community and positive policing, supporting grieving moms to push their purpose. So this is basically, you know, from that support, I've been able to really be able to just kind of do what we need to do from moving out and getting to where we can actually connect and have the resources that we need to pour back in. So it was when I got to Georgia is when I officially was able to get all my paperwork done and, you know, getting to becoming a 501c3 and getting all of that support. So
yeah,
we started there, but we really was able to build once we came here, and we pour back into there. But we support grieving parents all over. You know, we connect with people everywhere.
Wonderful, wonderful, all because of Dre. Wonderful, wonderful. And of course, us being moms, in our minds, our babies are with us until we go. They're
Oh,
supposed
definitely.
to bury us. So, yeah, so this is a whole nother. We think what we're going to do, we're going to raise our children, we're going to do this. We have in our mind how our life is going to go. And then once our babies move to heaven, a total turnaround on the direction and the purpose. So, you know, we don't like the vehicle. I can't stand the vehicle.
I
But we
agree. I
have
agree.
to drive it. We have to drive it. We got to drive it till the wheels fall off. What I say. Yeah. So just keep that in mind, mamas. We think we know which direction we're going. And it could be a whole nother way to go. And I hear often that moms do not know their purpose. I don't know my purpose. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. But like you said, stay in that prayerful, that meditation, that keep asking, keep look, you know, show me. And I also say it could be something 9 times out of 10, it could be something that you were already doing. I've always spoke, I've always sang, I've always, you know, was talking. So it could be in that same talent of what you were given, but just not on the same subject.
I find this to be so true because I am an educator to all the way down to myself. So yeah, an educator, and I'm like you, I'm a talker, a speaker. So therefore I'm educating. I transition out of the classroom because I was actually, when Dre was killed, I was in the 21st year. So I was right at about 4, maybe 3.5 years from retirement. But I had to walk away from all of that. I left the classroom because I could no longer function in a classroom and give those babies my whole self. Because when I walked into a classroom, that was I put everything into that because I feel that those children deserve my all. Whatever I was dealing with, whether it was home or whatever, however I'm dealing with outside of this classroom, when I walked into the school, I left it outside and I didn't. And I would try not to take school stuff home. You know, I tried to separate those lives because my children in that classroom, they deserve all of me. And after this happened with Drake, I didn't even know, and I don't even know who I am. So therefore I'm relearning myself. So I couldn't stand and I couldn't go in a classroom and give those babies what I didn't even know if I even still had. So I began to realize that I'm transitioning from academics, but now it's a whole new world. I'm still an educator. And now my purpose, or you know, it has shifted or grown to now we have to educate in other areas. We have to educate, you know, parents and moms and you know, just even siblings, because we're now moving into working with siblings who have lost siblings to, you know, to gun violence and different things like that. But just educating them that you don't have to die in this. You don't have to be the walking dead. Because there's purpose. Is it going to be easy? No. No, it is hard, very hard. But you have to, you know, you have to work at it. And especially, like I said, when you know there's purpose, you know, you don't have to die in it, even though it feels like it, it doesn't have to be.
That's good. That is so good. So good. Before I got a couple of more questions to end with, but before I do, I noticed you said that you're a dreamer. I'm also a dreamer. I write my dreams. I sleep with pen and paper. I'm a dreamer. Go ahead and tell us something, a sign or something that your baby has shown you or has given you, whether it be a dream or something you've seen just on your daily walk.
So, something that is so amazing and I'm so grateful for is not only has Dre's death changed my life and changed who I am, but it changed my spiritual journey as well. He came to me in the dream a few days after. And he stood there and he said, I was, and in the dream, I was sitting on my porch and he walked up and he was always not, and of course, no shirt, just his pants or whatever, and no shoes. And he stood there in the doorway. He said, "Hey, Mom, what you reading?" And I was reading something that wasn't making me very happy. And I said, "Nothing, don't worry about it." You know, and I kind of looked up at him sideways and he said, "Ma, it's time for me to change." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "It's time for me to change for the better." And he was so bright and he was just glowing. And it was like in that moment in my sleep, I realized, ooh, seize this moment. This is him. Seize the moment. And so when I did that, it was like I said, "Okay, baby, if that's what you know you need to do, then you change for the better. Better is always good." And he looked at me and he grabbed his back because he was shot in his back. So he grabbed his back and he said, "Oh, my back." And I said, "Come here, just let mama rub your back." And so as I was rubbing his back, he was standing, but he made his way in front of me to like lay across this table that I had on the porch and somewhat across me. And I was like, "I just want to rub your back." And he looked at me and he said, When I stop feeling my back, I'm going to be okay. Your strength, mama." And I was rubbing his back. He said that, he repeated that in that way three times to me. So that was my moment that I knew what happened. I knew his transition because I wasn't there. And so that one, and it was like it kind of just ended there. But he kept telling me my strength, and when he stopped feeling his back. So I knew that those last moments, because I was pondering that, those last moments, I knew that he knew what to do. He knew what he needed to do in those moments. And he knew that when he stopped feeling his back, that everything was going to be okay. And within another dream, I saw him reaching up, and which I never let the streets talk to me because I didn't want to hear what the streets had to say.
Me
I
too.
needed to know, and I would always tell people, mm-mm. You know, I would dominate conversations if I thought that the person was headed that way to tell me what happened and this and that. No, that's too much. I have a source that tells me everything I need to know. I don't need the streets to tell me
That's
anything.
good.
And
That's
my source is not going to tell me anything wrong because my source knows all, sees all, and will let me know. And he did. And he has, even from what happened. And even in that moment, like I said, I saw him reaching up, and others, and I got wind of that he reached that Dre actually in those last few moments, he reached up for a young lady that was there to help him. But that wasn't who he saw. He saw his escort, and that's who he was reaching for. And he was escorted out of here. So that gave me so much peace. So much peace. because he saw his escort and he was escorted out of here. So he wasn't reaching where people saw him reaching for physical. That's not what he was reaching for. And that was peace. The signs, and like I said, and the dove definitely a sign, the infinity sign. And the infinity sign connected with my spiritual journey, where I began to, which I had already begun to honestly just lose religion, because I, you know, for years I was raised religious, and I began to, and that's all I knew was religion.
Yeah.
And so in 2017, I had already, as Kirk Franklin said, I had already started losing my religion.
Yes.
And began to get a personal relationship, you know, and all of that. And so in 2019, when all this happened, the infinity sign kept appearing. It kept appearing. And I didn't know why. I didn't know what. But my mind at this time now is open to everything.
Yes.
I am open and willing to accept and willing to explore and willing to not bash.
That's right.
And reject things that I didn't understand, but now get an understanding of it. There's no harm in getting an understanding of it and then knowing where you're supposed to be and what it is you're supposed to do, because all of it connects to one true source.
Yeah.
One true divine source. All of it connects.
Yeah.
But what's for this one may not be for that one. So that's when I begin to explore. So I've seen so many signs, and now I don't see him as much in my dreams, but he came all the time, especially in the hardest moments. He'd come and he'd pick me up, or I could just hear him say, "You straight, Mom, snap back," because that was his thing. He'll say, "Come on, snap back," because he didn't like crying. He didn't like to see people sad. And whenever I would be, or if I'm angry or whatever, he'd be like, "You all right, snap back, Mom."
Snap back.
Yeah.
Snap back.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. I love, love, love listening to people's dreams, because I'm a dreamer. And you said that excellent, as far as this, now I'm open to this, you know, and that's just where I am. I am venturing off. I'm just like, this is a whole new, instead of just being in that one religious lane.
Yes.
You're missing so much.
Yes.
You're missing so much. You're not seeing, because you're stuck in this one religious lane.
Right.
So yeah. Yeah. I totally get that. Totally get it. Get it. Okay. So we're going to wrap up here, cause I can keep going. We're going to wrap up, but before we do, please let the mamas know where they can reach you. Where's your organization? How can they get in touch with you if they would like? Go ahead and let us know where you are.
Okay. I'm located in Marietta, Georgia, but I do travel when invited for speaking engagements. And you can also visit our website. Our website is operationrecovery.support. You can also email me at operationrecovery2019@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook. We have Operation Recovery INC Facebook, also on Instagram. We also, my personal pages, so you can contact me through either one of the Instagram or Facebook at Zanetta Henry.
Yeah.
On Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
So either one, you can reach out through, like I said, those. I am on Twitter as well. But I'm not as active on Twitter. So you might not get me as quick on Twitter. You also can, I'm on what are those other little platforms? TikTok. I'm on TikTok. But I'm not, you know, Facebook and Instagram are pretty much my functioning pages. I'm on those other ones, the other platforms and things like that. And I also have my link tree on my Facebook page and on my Instagram, that you can also go to either one of those and click on my link tree, and it'll give you contact information as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. All right. All right. So my last question is what I ask all my mamas. So here he goes. Zanetta, what are your hopes of heaven?
My hopes of heaven? What I see is a field of peace. A field of peace with so many loved ones fellowshipping.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ultimate and never ending day of peace.
That's good. That's good. I love it. I love it. That's good. Zanetta, it's been wonderful having you. I've just enjoyed your story and your journey. It has just strengthened me with the nuggets that you gave, and I'm sure other moms, they're just going to love soaking in your journey and about you and your Dre and your cause and your purpose. So I just wanted to thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much, Angela, for having me. Alana's beautiful and sweet mom. I really do appreciate you giving me this opportunity to share my baby and share our story and continue to share our purpose in helping moms.
Yes.
And thank you for just holding this space. It's so important for us moms.
Definitely. Definitely. All right. Well, we will talk to you soon, mamas.
Okay.
See you soon.